This podcast is proudly brought to you by Infinity Media, incubating innovative businesses in the media industry.
Hi, I'm Gordon Muller. I'm the guru in the Doc and Guru podcast. Thanks for being with us. For those of you who don't know me, I've spent over 40 years in the media industry in South Africa and pretty much made it my home, my life, my passion. I have other passions, unfortunately, for my sins. I'm an Arsenal supporter and a Sharks supporter, so we're going to do pretty much everything on the show as it pertains to media, marketing, and money, but we don't take jokes about Arsenal or the Sharks.
I'm Doug Mateus, the doc on the show. And again, for those of you who don't know me, I spent 30 years in various companies in South Africa running different marketing functions. And the last job I had, I was privileged enough to work with a team that took the brand to the fastest growing brand in South Africa in 2018 with a 47% year-on-year growth. So that was a great achievement for the team, and I'm really proud of that. From a personal point of view, I do a little bit of cycling and also snow skiing, so we quite enjoy that. But again, today's discussion is around all things marketing and media.
Yep, that's right, Doc. All things marketing and media. No subject too big, no topic too small, no subject too hot to handle. Please get in touch with us on our Facebook page, follow us, like us, whatever it takes. We would love you to be involved with the show, and we really want to make it as inclusive and as energetic as I know this industry is capable of.
Hey, Gordon, how's it going?
It's going well, Doc. It's cold, as you know. I think we're in midwinter now, and it shows. So, you know, I'll spare you the description of my long johns and my sort of thermal socks from Dis-Chem, but I can assure you they've been tactically deployed.
Like we've always said, Gordon, we're so grateful that this is an audio-only feed. People don't really need to see your long johns or whatever, you know. So all good. And Gordon, yeah, it's that time of the year again, you know. It's Marketing Achievement Awards season, like last year. Remember, we celebrated and we brought on two categories. We brought on young rising stars under 35s, and we profiled the finalists, and then also the marketer of the year. And this year is no different. You know, I'm again part of the judging committee on both of those awards. And today we've got our first guest in this mini series on marketing achievements.
Fantastic! It's a marvelous initiative, and I think we really enjoyed it last year working through, you know, some of the stalwarts of the industry and balancing those perspectives between the people who've, you know, walk the long road and the people who are just sort of engaging on that road. And between the two, the balance between the two for me was outstanding. I think that's where the real learning comes from, the balancing of new perspectives with the experience of old perspectives. It was very, very exciting, and I'm looking forward to this series now coming up in the next week or so.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is great. I mean, you know, without taking up more time, I mean, our first guest is in the Rising Stars category, so the under 35s. Jared Patel, Jared, welcome. Firstly, congratulations on being a finalist. I mean, that's a fantastic achievement. And I mean, it must be great for you.
Hi, Doug. Yes, thank you very much. And thank you for having me on the show. And I'd like to thank you also for, you know, considering me as a finalist for the awards. I think just the awards in general are something I would also like to thank you guys for. You know, it's often that marketers often spend time marketing their own brands and don't kind of market ourselves enough. And I think it's quite nice to have that recognition. So appreciate it. And also for this show, you know, it's also something that, you know, gets exposure for not just the people behind the scene, but also the work that we do behind the scenes. So it's really great. And thank you for that.
Yeah, thanks, Jared. And I appreciate, you know, and I know Gordon does as well, your kind words. And I think, you know, when we set out, it was always that intention of not just us talking, although, you know, I think through the years, we've obviously gained a lot of knowledge, but it's having great guests, you know, having people like yourself coming through the system. And as Gordon says, you know, people who are at different stages of their careers, great, valuable lessons. So thanks a lot. I mean, let's get straight into it. I mean, today you're the head of marketing for the Sea Harvest Group. So let's just talk a little bit about your job, and then let's talk about your current marketing, and also, you know, for our listeners, the entry that you've submitted to get yourself into the top five finalists for Rising Stars.
Sure. So to start with my role, so I'm the head of marketing at the Sea Harvest Group. Sea Harvest Group has grown substantially over the time that I've been here. I at the moment, so if we look at the group in general, it's headlined by the Sea Harvest Corp, which is the fishing arm of the business. That's got multiple divisions within it. So the one that people or consumers and people in South Africa are most familiar with is the supermarket retail business, right? So that's the boxes that you'll see in freezers and your Pick and Pays and Checkers and Spars. And that's where most of like the brand sits. But the business is much bigger than that. It's also the food service arm. It's the our international arm, our exports division. We also have 16 factory shops in South Africa, which we started a few years ago. And that makes up the Sea Harvest Corp. My role within that is basically all of the marketing that we do within those divisions. We focus mainly on the brand in South Africa. We also have a brand presence in Australia, but the Sea Harvest brand itself is focused in South Africa. And that role is really, you know, beginning to end. It's from product dev to pricing strategies to distribution to aiding you know, promotions and advertising, et cetera, within the local arm. We also, in the last few years, in 2018, we purchased Ladysmith Cheese Company, the Sea Harvest Group. So we have a controlling share of the Ladysmith Cheese Company. And within that, I also play a role in terms of the marketing of that brand. It already has a business structure. So in terms of like product dev and distribution, et cetera, that they are, you know, people and businesses in place, but we definitely play a big role in terms of the advertising and promotional side of things. And then we also last year purchased another company called BM Foods. You may be familiar with the Mediterranean Delicacies brand, which you will see in some of your supermarkets. And they also have a number of other small food brands. And, you know, we play a similar role in terms of that, you know, adding some value in terms of being able to support, these smaller brands who want to be able to also, you know, develop themselves as a FMCG brand in the country. So the Sea Harvest Group, as I said, you know, since I've joined has gone from one fishing brand to now a real food group. We have, 12 different actual brands that are sitting in this in South Africa at the moment that you'll see anywhere in the retail space. Part of the group also now includes the Viking business, which is a fishing and aquaculture business that we are also integrating into the Sea Harvest group itself. So, yeah, a lot of exciting developments that have happened since I've been a part of it. And yeah, in terms of the actual entrant that got me into the competition, or has nominated at least, we actually submitted two pieces of work, but the first one was a project that we called the Mealtime Heroes. So some background on that is quite an interesting story. So I joined as head of marketing after running part of the Sea Harvest business, a division within the business. I came back into marketing as the head of marketing. And the biggest issue that we had at that point was that our fish finger category, fish fingers is the biggest in terms of supermarket retail, the fish finger category is the biggest one. So we were seeing massive declines in our fish finger, in the fish finger category for sea harvest. And we had to get to the bottom of it. So, traditionally we are very strong in terms of fish fingers. So we did a lot of research, starting with, product testing. We did consumer testing. We did focus groups. We did, quantitative analysis. We did pricing studies. We did, shop-alongs. We went all over the country profiling different types of people, finding out what is happening with this. The main thing was around product inconsistency. And we sorted that out. We did a whole lot of tests. We got kids involved because those are our main consumers, right? So try to make sure that when they're dipping their fish fingers in tomato sauce and eating it, that they're happy. They were the main kind of proponents in terms of guiding us on what to do to change it. And we also had to find some other insights, right? And the main insights were that along with the product inconsistencies with the crumb, that we had also, there were some health kind of misconceptions with fish fingers, the health benefits of fish fingers, as well as it's quite a cold and, undifferentiated and uninviting space, a freezer aisle, right? And we had to now try to liven that up and find ways to make that a little bit more appealing to consumers and people. So after we relaunched the product, we redid the recipe on the product dev side, found out what people wanted. We actually won product of the year at the end of 2020. And then we obviously needed to tell people about this and make it a little bit more interesting for people. So I had this wild idea that I took to my agency about actually injecting some life into the category by creating these fish finger animated mascots. They basically are almost like a play on Sausage Party, but not as risque if you've ever watched it. And we made them into like these superhero spoofy characters. The Incredible Hulk, Captain Crisp, and Omega Mind. And it was quite funny. I went into my CEO's office at that time with like a half-drawn version of these things, not quite developed yet, and said, look, this is the idea that I have for reinvigorating this category. And you can imagine his reaction to that. I think I was lucky that he believed in me more than really the idea or the concept at that time. And he said, kind of go for it. And we made this we made it into a full blown kind of integrated campaign. All the way from a huge in-store point of sale presence to creating mascots, real life mascots in all the regions that we're in, with a song and a dance and activations. We developed a sea harvest food truck, which has been phenomenal since then, that goes around to different stores, our main stores, and cooks up free meals for people. And we have our characters outside the truck doing a song and dance and converting people at point of sale with these products. It's blown up since then. And I think, the main thing about it is that we had fun with it. We really had fun with it, and we took it kind of to the next level, and it grew from there, and people liked the idea. It caught on. That was the Mealtime Heroes. I think that was the main thing that I submitted, as part of my entry. Yeah.
Just to add to that, I mean, as you say, The lessons for I guess younger marketers out there is to do a really firstly start with the robust research and get to the bottom of the issue, 100%. Which is what you were saying, as opposed to just jumping to a creative solution and saying, well, let's just throw advertising money at it. I think that's such an important lesson. And then from there on out, looking at your core audience, which is, as you say, kids, and then doing that multidisciplinary approach of touching various touch points. And it's so important, Gordon. And I mean, you know, from a media point of view, and I know that's something that you want to discuss, is it's not sometimes there's no silver bullet. You know, you can't just go and say it's just in store, you know, or it's just the food truck, or it's just a radio campaign, as an example. It's often integrated.
Yeah, I think, you know, that just to come back to the issue of mealtime heroes, my definition of a mealtime hero is anybody who is prepared to eat what I cook at home. So thanks to my family that are embracing my new desire to reinvigorate my culinary skills. Although I must say, fish fingers are now very much part of my repertoire because I have now got an air fryer. Oh, and if you're struggling to get the texture of your fish fingers right, just go and get an air fryer. It's just unbelievable. So it's mainstream now for us in our household. But you know, what's intriguing to me is listening to the key words, Jared, that you've been talking about. You talked about your retail relationships. You talked about in-store. The whole category, to my surprise, you know, looking at it this last few days in preparation, is very traditional media light. And that is something which kind of stands out. Where's the balance? You know, in the old days, if you had these delightful characters, television would have been a natural play. And it might, in many instances, have been the total play. How have you balanced that need to generate sort of brand awareness and brand love with the in-store applications, the mascots, the truck? That for me is the interesting part of the story, the balance. And you didn't just default to the standard approach, traditional media.
Yes, I mean, I think that is the challenge. You know, I think traditionally coming in, you know, 12 years ago, even, you know, we had a few channels that we would lean on, and you know, since then, you know, as basically food prices have increased, inflation has increased, we've tried to make it as easy as possible for our consumers to keep affording our products. Co-op advertising takes up a lot of our budget, and you know, supporting our retailers takes up a lot of our budget. And we've still got to find ways to advertise our products, and we have to choose what we think are the best in terms of being able to support our customer journey at every single point. So we obviously divide our customer journey into, you know, our consideration set, you know, pre-purchase set, purchasing, and we have a look at what media lends itself best to each of those. And we have to make a decision then in terms of, all right, is traditional media going to be your traditional media? I think, you know, we talk about traditional and digital, but it's all real media with different channels, right? But is, for example, TV and radio the best for us right now? Is print going to be the best for us right now? Is digital going to be the best to support that? And I think we have in the past, you know, done more in the sense of TV, of radio, but we have to be able to sustain that for a long period of time. And I think with budgets being quite tight, particularly in our category where margins are not necessarily as high maybe as people think, we have to be a bit smart with our budgets. And I think that gives us, you know, and presents us with the challenge of trying to, you know, see which is going to be the most sustainable way to get a message out. A big part of us is around, a big part of our category is around education. And obviously being food, it's a visual category, right? So in the consideration set and brand awareness set, it's basically, can you afford to do a television campaign where it's audio visual or, you know, and if you can't, what are the other things that you can do? And that's why we've leaned on a lot of like digital video. And we've tried to get reach and awareness out through digital video. But in saying that, we also have done a lot of like cooking shows, Afternoon Express, Espresso, those types of lifestyle shows, Getting people at a consideration point on TV is also what we do, but not necessarily through brand advertising. So yeah, it is a tough thing to balance. And I've often found like that there is a lot of value at the moment in traditional media. I think a lot of marketers are leaning on digital media because it's easier to measure, right? And you know whether or not that's the lazy approach or not, but because there are you know easy key like ways to measure it, and it doesn't cost as much, you can tend to focus on it a bit more. But I think there's a lot of value in traditional media, and I think that you know we do find ways to balance our media mix.
You're listening to The Doc and the Guru, proudly brought to you by Infinity Media.
Yeah, thanks, Jared. That's great. Gordon, I don't know if you wanted to just add something onto that.
No, I'm just intrigued by the thought that you took the concept to your agency. I hope you got a discount on your retainer that month. If you take 5 years to your agency, that seems to be a role reversal. We may debate whether traditional media are less easily measured than digital media. I'm not sure I'd agree with you. I think digital media obviously get a more immediate measure and more potential to link that immediate measure to an outcome. But the one thing for me which is intriguing in this, and here it's a question I don't know the answer to. In the past, you mentioned the freezer area, and you know it's pretty tight. The space there is pretty tight. Back in the day, getting shelf space or freezer space was a function of how much money you put behind the brand on television. How do you work with your retail partners then, you know, in terms of attributing space, freezer space or shelf space for brands without a demonstrable kind of investment in media up front? That was the formula as it used to be. Maybe it's all changed now.
Yeah, I mean, we don't really, I think for us, more space basically is more rate of sale. If your brand, you know, does generally sell more, you generally get more space. Obviously, it helps if you are supporting your brand a lot in media. But, you know, I think in general, if you look at the food and frozen space at the moment, the traditional media space is, as you said, is quite light. I think it's just from a perspective of not being able to have budgets that support sustainable kind of campaigns. And I think you see that a lot, like not just in our frozen space, but it's becoming a lot more in the food space. And I think if I think about when kind of I was growing up, we grew up with Sea Harvest ads, I&J ads, and a lot of FMCG ads just all over the TV. And you know, I have those ads committed to my memory, deep ingrained. So and it's unfortunate that you know we at this time can't keep that kind of level of advertising going. But we are finding innovative and smart ways to try to get around that, you know, being able to still produce quality video, still produce, quality messaging and comms, and being able to disperse that through other means. But as I said, it's not to say that we are completely not doing it. We are finding, you know, where there is value, where we can, we tend to put it up.
Thanks, Jared. I think, you know, I guess the lesson, and we always like to leave a few lessons along the way for our listeners, is to actually look at your partnerships across the board. And I know you've done it particularly well, is look at, and you mentioned, you know, your big retailers, but not just your big retailers, you know, partners that go with Fish Fingers, like for argument's sake, chips. Fish fingers, yes. And chips and tomato sauce. And so, maybe you just want to touch a little bit on that type of symbiotic relationship, because sometimes brands don't have that. You know, they've got to kind of fight their own fight. Whereas, you know, sometimes 100%. It's nice to think, just sometimes just using a little bit of logic, just look at the kid's plate. And that's maybe the answer of saying, well, who else can I buddy up with in tough economic times?
100%. So, yeah, I think that leads me on to the other thing that we submitted as part of the awards was how this started off was we came out of lockdown, and during lockdown, actually frozen food saw a very, very good increases of people into the category, because obviously people were forced to stay at home. And, you know, the best thing that you can do at that time, because you're visiting stores less as well, is buy frozen food. So the frozen food category was increasing. And we could look at like associated products that were being bought at the time through the shopper data we have. And we saw McCain was one of the brands that was, you know, popping up a lot. And obviously, it's, you know, when people are buying one thing in frozen, they're generally going to buy another. And how retailers work is that when two products are on promotion at the same time, generally they'll pair them up in a broadsheet ad in a supermarket catalog, and it'll normally happens at random, right? So they'll pair up two products to put it as a meal solution bundle, and you know, I saw this happening and said, look, we don't want to be put up with anyone. You know, if we want to be in a combo, most likely we'd like to be with McCain. So we gave them a call and we started speaking about, you know, kind of where we are in our marketing process, where they are in their marketing process. A lot of those things started marrying up. A lot of the things that they've done in terms of research were marrying up. And, you know, I had this idea in terms of starting a marketing campaign with them. Approach their team. They, you know, they have a fantastic team at McCain. We got on very well and still getting on very well. And we came up with this campaign idea called Friends in Your Freezer. It was a completely 50-50 joint marketing campaign. The intention of it was to, you know, obviously take advantage of the influx of people into the frozen aisles and to keep them there. So, yeah, and it ended up being another fantastic integrated campaign. We repositioned really our brands from you know just selling fish and just selling veggies and chips into a meal solution kind of offering, and all the advertising and marketing that we did was around creating these meal solutions. And inspiring people that, you know, to stay within frozen because they're of all the benefits that frozen has, the health benefits of frozen, the convenience benefits of frozen, and also just making it an interesting, exciting campaign. Both of us saw good increases in sales from it over the period. And it's led to a blossoming relationship with them now, not just from a marketing point of view, but also product dev, you know, kind of supply chain, etc. So it's been really good.
Just commenting on your point about the digital video, it's interesting. I've just been sort of doing a training workshop with an FMCG brand, and sort of working through the whole TikTok model, where TikTok have their mantra is don't make ads, make TikToks.
Yes,
it's the actual digital videos, the sales point. Not you don't advertise. Andy Ross, you know, our branding guru in South Africa, always says, you know, don't interrupt the thing I'm interested in. Be the thing I'm interested in. And TikTok had 72 million new subscribers in June. They reached potentially 11% of the entire global population. And so I get it. And I think this is the challenge for traditional video platforms like television is how do you get around that? I mean, you know, you make something that's so intriguing with a bit of characterization, particularly for young people. And suddenly it's a different game. I mean, you open up the potential for merchandising as part of that. I was going through the old Melbourne Metropolitan Railway campaign, which broke, you know, all the records about 10 years ago, Dumb Ways to Die, where they created this sort of, you know, just it's such a crazy video that you come and watch the thing. But they've generated $80 million in the past 10 years on merchandising these little characters. So I think that's the real challenge, you know, that this approach generates for television, is you've gone way beyond watching the video. It's the play out in merchandising and everything that goes with it. So a very interesting case study. I'm looking forward to seeing the outcome of the judging on the marketing excellence. Though fortunately, you've got to make the tough call. I just sit here and enjoy it.
You know, and just, Gordon, I forgot about that campaign, Dumb Ways to Die. And you just reminded me now, it had a very catchy song. Now, I don't want to think about it too long because I don't want that silly song to be stuck into my head. Because, I mean, I remember for months at that time, we would reference that piece of work as an example. I'm going back a few years. So I'm going to quickly move on before, Jared, just as we're moving towards the end, I mean, we've got so many more questions and it's just been great chatting to you. I mean, well done again on two great campaigns and partnerships and alliances and understanding the big picture. And I mean, part of, I guess, you know, the criticism against marketers and moving towards modern marketers is having a business approach, you know, not an advertising lens only. So with that, I'm going to ask you my last question, which is a double-barreled one, and that is around any advice that you have for young marketers out there. And secondly, what skills do you believe are paramount for now and into the immediate future?
Sure. Look, I think I can only really give advice from like my own career in terms of when I've seen growth in my career and when I have plateaued or haven't, you know, really been growing. And I think the times where I've seen growth in my career is when you get out of that box, you know, of what people think marketers are, and actually start getting involved in the entire business. And I think, you know, marketers are the link between the company and the consumer, right? And I think you, in order for you to be that link, you need to understand the company as much as possible, and to, you know, to make yourself involved across functions. So, like, you know, the first thing that happened to me when I joined Sea Harvest 12 years ago now is that in my grad program, as part of the grad program, in the first few weeks, they put me on a vessel for 6 days out deep sea fishing, and got me to experience what it was like to be a fisherman on a Sea Harvest vessel, which is, you know, really an unbelievable experience. But it set the tone for really getting to know the business really, you know, from A to Z. And I strongly believe that CEOs should be coming from marketing more than any other function. For that reason, you know, you understand the business better than anyone. You understand why consumers buy your product better than anyone. You should have a very good idea of the narrative of your brand and PR relevant to it. And, you know, the only way you're going to get to that point is to get out of the box of what people think marketers do, and to really involve yourself in the business from A to Z. So that's what I would say, and that's something that I've seen growth in my career. And in terms of what I think, you know, the skills that marketers need to add to that, I think, you know, a lot of people, I think correctly say a firm grasp of data and analytics, but it's also the soft skills to add to those things, right? So having understanding and empathy and compassion for who your customers are, who your market is. And, you know, I think a good example of that is, you know, we often as marketers, we see things just from our perspective, or we see our brand just from our perspective, and don't take a step out to think about what our, you know, market and customer group is. You know, and a good example of that is to look at like advertising and marketing and see how little is in other languages, especially in South Africa, how little is in other languages, and and how little is from a real perspective of maybe an average South African. I think we as marketers need to do that better. I'm also at fault for that. I think, you know, in general, we need to have a better understanding of who our market is, and often reflect on that. So, yeah, I think that's from my understanding.
Great. Jared, thanks very much, man. Those are valuable lessons. And hopefully, you know, our listeners are listening to that because you're one of the finalists. And again, from my side, well done. Congratulations up to this point. And obviously, good luck into, you know, into the judging. As you say, Gordon, not easy because, you know, we've got some, again, this year, some really top names in it. Gordon, let me leave it to you and then I'll just close it out after your last comments.
Yeah, again, congratulations, Jared. It's fantastic and great to see young people embracing the award. I think one of the things which has come through to me in the last week or two, and going back to our chat a week or so back, Doug, with Momentum, is marketers taking the initiative. I just happened to be watching at the moment The Offer, which is that remarkable TV series on Netflix about the making of The Godfather. And, you know, the passion with which producers like Alan Ruddy pursued their concept, and they didn't let anybody get in the way. And I think it's really good to see marketers embracing, you know, or, you know, laying claim to the driver's seat rather than just sitting back and letting themselves be dictated to by agencies. So I think that's really a good thing. Because they're both going to be winners. If my marketing partners are driving me through excellence, I have to up my game. So I think it's a win-win for everybody when marketers start driving the bus again. So congratulations and look forward to seeing the outcome.
Thanks, Gordon. And it's good coming from a fellow Shark supporter too. I'm very happy to hear that you're a Shark supporter. I'm sure you are also happy to see two South African teams in the final of the URC, but I think next year is our year.
Yeah, as long as you didn't wear your Sharks jersey a week or so ago at the final.
No, I wasn't that guy.
Dodgy behavior.
I wasn't that guy in the stadium with his Sharks jersey. No, no.
See, stick him on a boat for 6 days, Gordon, and he becomes a Shark. I mean, this is... Guys, thanks very much. Jared, again, thanks. And from our side, again, you know, well done and congratulations. To our listeners out there, please stay part of the conversation. Chat with Gordon and I, or our great, interesting guests. And this week, you know, with Gordon's new air fryer, I've renamed him Gordon Ramsay.
Gives me a license, presumably, to use language on the show, which was previously considered unacceptable.
No, it's a family show, Gordon. Just stick with the fish fingers in the air fryer for your grandkids and everyone will be happy. Guys, thanks, Gordon. I'll catch you next week. Jared, thanks for your time. Congratulations, and we'll see you later.
Appreciate it, guys. Thank you very much.
And so that was another episode of The Doc and the Guru. Please don't forget to get hold of us on Facebook, like us, follow us, subscribe to the podcast. And then from my side, you can get hold of me on LinkedIn, Dr. Doug Mataz. I'm very active and very keen to hear about your views. And certainly will respond, and hopefully we can bring that into the show.
Thanks, Doc, and it's Gordon Miller, the Guru, signing off. Thank you for being with us and listening into this podcast today. You can pick up the discussion with me on my Twitter handle, @MzanziMedia, and I'd love to engage with you on any of the issues that we've taken on in the show. And take us at our word. This is really going to be an open forum. There are no subjects that are taboo, and we'd love to have some of the younger, more under-listened, if that's the correct phrase, voices to join us in this discussion. Thanks for your time.
The Doc and the Guru, proudly brought to you by Infinity Media, incubating innovative businesses in the media industry.